National Public Radio cracks down on internal dissent. I'm Scott Ott with Stephen Green and Bill Whittle. This episode of Right Angle is brought to you by the members of BillWhittle.com. And gentlemen, there was a senior business editor who had been with National Public Radio, NPR, for some 25 years, who published an article on a subreddit. I'm not a subreddit, Substack, I believe it's called, called The Free Press, and basically said NPR has lost its moorings as what it used to be, in his opinion, was a fairly fair and honest journalism platform and has become just nothing but a mouthpiece for progressivism and an increasingly smaller group of progressives. And his big ask for NPR, Steve Green, was just don't tell people how to think. Now, Steve, this guy whose name I'm going to mispronounce was Yuri Berliner or Berliner. I'm not sure Berliner, how you say that. He's NPR's.
I think it's Berliner, but I could be mistaken.
Yeah. Ich bin ein Berliner. Okay. So he has a really great piece that you ought to read if you haven't read it yet. But he's been working for NPR for years. And he posts this article that basically says he chronicles a bunch of things. For example, he said NPR had massive coverage of so-called Russiagate, the accusation that there was some sort of collusion between Donald Trump and the Russian government or Vladimir Putin, and interviewed Adam Schiff like 25 times so he could talk about this until Mueller came out with his report finding no credible evidence of collusion. And then the story just kind of vanished. There was no mea culpa. There was no, hey, we made a mistake there. NPR ignored the Hunter Biden laptop thing, fearing that it might help Trump in the lead up to the election. Yeah. NPR stayed with the Anthony Fauci line that the COVID pandemic was caused by natural origin, basically the wet markets in China, instead of a possible leak from a Wuhan laboratory. And then he goes into a whole bunch more stuff. These are just, it's not all about Trump, so don't get me wrong about this. And one of the things I found interesting, Steve, was that he did a survey of like the Washington office of NPR where he was working, and he found that on staff there were 87 registered Democrats and zero registered Republicans.
Yeah, and zero might be an overcount.
Now, if conservatives listening to this are going to say, number one, who listens to NPR? Number two, of course, we've known that for years. But Yuri's argument in this column is not that it's always been that way. He said, yes, they've always been mostly liberals, but and he voted gleefully against Donald Trump both times he had a chance to. So he's not saying that he's not liberal, but he's saying we should cover the news accurately. This gets him a 5-day suspension without pay, and my guess is that's just the beginning of the beatings until morale improves. What do you think, Steve Green?
Welcome to All Things Considered. NPR used to be the Valium of radio. You know, you would tune it in and you would get that heavily sedated newscast. They were anti-hype, maybe more than they were pro-left. And Scott, I know you were a big listener back in the day. I know lots of conservatives and Republicans who used to listen to NPR. It was unhyped radio, and yes, it had a political bias, but not so much that you couldn't or wouldn't listen to it. And that all changed around 10 years ago with the emergence of you-know-who down a golden escalator. Trump derangement syndrome is an ugly, ugly disease. What I love is, are you familiar with their new CEO, Catherine Maher?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only from this article,
yeah,
these articles.
She is quite the piece of work. NPR is, I guess they're trying to figure out, and she's trying to figure out what to do with all of her old tweets. She hasn't made her account private, or at least she hasn't at the time we're taping this on Tuesday. She hasn't deleted her account. They haven't tried to hush any of this stuff up. But you go through her old tweets, and it's just example after example of that comical left-wing hive mind that became so prevalent around 2020. Let's see. This one is from July of 2020. She says, lots of jokes about leaving the U.S., and I get it. But as someone with cis white mobility privilege, I'm thinking I'm staying and investing in ridding ourselves of this specter of tyranny. She said, today I had to keep a straight face while talking to a journalist about Donald Rumsfeld being an alien lizard who eats Mexican babies. Oh, yeah. Let's see. What else do we have out here? CNN is talking about the tragedy of... Again, these are all from 2020. CNN is talking about the tragedy of damage to iconic retail zones and shoe stores in L.A. I mean, sure, looting is counterproductive, but it's hard to be mad about protests not prioritizing the private property of a system of oppression founded on treating people's ancestors as private property. This is who has run NPR for the last few years. She is just, you know, that chirpy, guilt-ridden creature of white progressivism, and it would be comical if it weren't so essentially totalitarianist, if not just merely authoritarian. They're shutting this guy up for speaking the truth. What do you think they're doing with their newscasts?
Bill Whittle, this Yuri Berliner quotes some statistics in his article. He said, back in 2011, although NPR's audience tilted a bit to the left, it still bore a resemblance to America at large. 26% of listeners back in 2011 described themselves as conservative, 23% as middle of the road, and 37% as liberal. By 2023, the picture was completely different. Only 11% described themselves as very or somewhat conservative, 21% as middle of the road, and 67% of listeners said they were very or somewhat liberal. We weren't just losing conservatives, he says. We were also losing moderates and traditional liberals. And then he cites internal employee resource groups, they call them, or affinity groups, within NPR. This is all inside of NPR. They include, and I can't do the acronyms for this because they're unpronounceable, but they include groups called Marginalized Genders and Intersex People of Color Mentorship Program, another one called Mi Gente, which is a Latinx employee group at NPR.
It's NPR pronounced Latinx.
I'm sorry.
Also, I've heard that the Latinx viewers don't like that label.
Well, actually, that's true. And he says that in this article. He says that NPR insists on using that terminology, even though the vast majority of people they identify as such don't like the term.
Of course they don't.
There's another group called NPR Noir, Black Employees, Southwest Asians and North Africans of NPR, UMA, a Muslim-identifying employee group, women, gender expansive, and transgender people in technology through public media, and the list goes on.
Oh, please, I want to know the acronym for that last one.
So basically, what he's saying is that the NPR has become increasingly different from the audience that it professes to serve. Later on, he mentions the fact that despite their efforts at all this egalitarianism and racial sensitivity, their percentage of Black and Latino listeners is way below just the percentage in the general public, and it is not growing. It's shrinking. So they're not even reaching the people they purport to love. Finally, Bill, they sent out an email recently to the people at NPR bragging that they had just rated higher in trustworthiness than both CNN and The New York Times. However, a Harris poll talking to people who were familiar with NPR found that only 3 in 10 associated the word trustworthy with NPR, and these are from people who know what NPR is.
Well, welcome to Small Things Considered, where you get the entire political spectrum of far left on one side to extreme left on the other. This is just another case of Steve, who was it who came up with Roll Left and Die? a friend of mine.
No, Sarah Hoyt, yeah, a science fiction author and a dear friend of mine, yeah.
Right, right, yeah, roll left and die. This is what happens when organizations start to lose market share. And political parties, too, because this is just essentially mirroring what's happening with the Democratic Party. As they continue to lose market share, they think that the strategy is to become more radical, to hold on to a more fervent but smaller group of supporters in the belief that their fanaticism will outweigh the numbers of people that they might have had otherwise, which is why you're not only losing conservatives for NPR, you're also losing moderates. The theory is that, well, it's not even a theory. The result is that as they continue to lose moderates and conservatives, they become more and more progressive, and even liberals start falling off of the horizon as that becomes more and more and more ridiculous, as outlined by the names of these various groups inside of NPR, all of which are fighting for dominance in terms of telling you what to think, not how to think or what to think about. I had an experience, and I feel very, very I feel a great deal of affection towards this Mr. Berliner. And the reason I feel affection for him and regret at his, although tempered regret at his punishment, is because he's a man of conscience.
Yeah.
And when you're dealing with people of conscience, you can reason with them. Yeah. People who have character would rather be right than consistent. People who have character are in pursuit of the truth, regardless of where the truth leads you. And an NPR made up of nothing but people like Mr. Berliner would be a very different NPR because it would be dedicated to the truth rather than to an ideology. I'm not trying to suggest that we are immune to this, certainly. We have the same kind of problems, but I don't think we have it on anything like the level that the left does, if for no other reason than the fact that the right has to listen to the left's arguments every single day because it's the ocean we swim in. And the left's position is tune out anything that disagrees with these core leftist principles, which explains why NPR has become basically what it is, which is a joke. Unfortunately, National Public Radio is funded by taxpayers, and half of the taxpayers in this country don't like what NPR is saying. So I think you could make a compelling case that since it is not look, if it's a private company, do whatever the hell it wants to. It's entirely its business. But what we have seen as a measure, and I think this reflects a measure of the closeness to the truth aspect of it. Remember Air America when that came out back in 2008-ish?
Yeah.
So this was the answer to conservative talk radio. And it was classically liberal in its answer. It was consolidated, top-down network funded by billionaires. You know, we're going to get all the top names in one place. I mean, conservative talk radio is 600 different hosts on 600 different AM channels at any given time. And it was an absolute failure. And it was a failure because nobody wanted to listen to it. And NPR would have been gone quite a long time ago if it weren't for the fact that conservatives and liberals, but also conservatives, are paying taxes to keep it in business. So there's the ultimate cause of your disconnect from reality with the NPR issue, Scott, is they are not beholden to reality. They're going to get paid whether they stray from reality or not. They're going to get paid whether they provide what the audience wants or not. One of the unintended consequences, and a very serious one, in fact, you could make a case as one of the worst decisions that ever made. Just stay with me on this. It used to be that movie studios owned their own theater chains. A Paramount movie would be distributed throughout Paramount theaters, and you would go to a theater that was owned by Paramount. And this was declared to be a monopoly. And so legislation was passed that said that the studios can no longer own the movie theaters. Well, the problem with that is that since the studios were no longer dependent on the revenue from the movie theaters, the studios were no longer dependent on making movies that people wanted to watch. They were getting their money from places like China and from investment funds and from other forms of investment, but not directly from the box office. And this alone is what led to this tremendous change from Hollywood being a pro-American, go-to-a-movie, feel-good experience to an anti-American, go-to-a-movie, come-out-and-shoot-yourself experience because the studios no longer had the incentive of making the audience happy. they were no longer directly connected to the box office. There was a third party that was putting up the money, and that's who got the revenues. This is the same sort of thing with NPR. They are no longer and have never been beholden to making and maintaining a listenership because they are subsidized by tax dollars. And eventually, NPR will be listened to. Eventually, logically, if you let it go until its conclusion at the end of the universe, there will be one person listening to NPR, and it'll be this woman that you mentioned earlier.
Well, sadly, it might be me. And unlike what Steve said, I actually do listen to, I'm conservative, and I do listen to NPR. I listen almost daily, probably 5 days a week as I'm getting ready to go to work, because I don't enjoy just talk radio, oddly enough. Somebody who does what I do here, you'd think would be all excited about listening to other people doing something similar. I don't. So I don't want to just turn on one of the local talk stations, even if the people agree with me. In fact, the people who agree with me are usually the most annoying to me because I always think, well, don't they know how to say that better? But I do listen to NPR, and perhaps my big frustration is, as I listen on a daily basis, they're so predictable. If they mention somebody whose name I haven't heard before, who has died, let's say, I know that person either has to have some sort of homosexual or transgender, you know, sex thing going on in their lives, or has to be a racial activist. If they review a book on one of these NPR shows, guaranteed it's going to be in one of those categories, or climate change. It's so predictable what they're going to cover. And then they can't seem to find anybody to offer a contrary opinion. If they do a story, there's nobody who they can interview who will state something from a different perspective. They also can't seem to ask the logical next question. So while I'm, you know, washing my hair in the shower and listening to this newscast, I'm like shouting coaching tips to the speaker in my bathroom going, no, let's see, the next question needs to be this. You know, it's like it's an obvious next question. You must ask this question. And they never ask the obvious next question. And then ultimately, I think what Mr. Berliner's case has illustrated for us is that the one sort of last bastion of perhaps the last organization that had an opportunity at least to do even-handed journalism not only can't do it, but can't stomach internal dissent. I mean, if any organization should be open to questions, it should be a journalistic enterprise. When somebody within raises the question and says, hey, why is it like this? And they say, we are beyond criticism. You need to take some time off without pay. They have just said everything we need to know about NPR. Now, sadly, hope springs eternal, not only with Mr. Yuri Berliner, but with me. I will keep listening because I keep thinking that someday somebody is going to wake up there, and maybe this new CEO, despite her past, can say, you know what, I've got my own opinions, but that doesn't mean that's the way a news organization should be. One final thought here. During their fundraising appeals, they constantly point out that 92% of the funding of the local station comes from local people. And so, you know, it's a relatively small portion of it that comes from government sources or outside of the local community. And then sometimes people will give money and record a message. And I want to reach out to them and go, look, if I give you $100, will you let me say whatever I want to say for 30 to 60 seconds? Because in reality, I'm listening to NPR because it's an intelligence source for me, as if I were a spy. If you want to know what the other side is thinking, listen to NPR. It's out there. It's available. It's free unless you want to become a donor. But they think they're being even-handed, and they don't see any disparity between being good journalists and having no Republicans at all on staff. However, if I want to know what the hard left is doing, all I have to do is tune into my local NPR station. It's really sad. Years ago, I worked for a public TV station, and I worked for a news program there that was interviewing people, and it wasn't like this. You know, we were encouraged to do the research. I was an associate producer. We would do the research to write the questions for the host so that she had a, you know, because she was shooting five shows in a row, and so she had a team of people who would prepare questions and stuff like that. And there were no guidelines. There were no political agendas. It was just, hey, we've got this person coming in. Let's find out everything we can that's interesting about what this person does. Wouldn't it be great if somebody at NPR suddenly recaptured that vision? I will tell you this, you could have the lion's share of the market, NPR, because you'd be alone, because nobody is trying it anymore. Nobody's trying to do journalism. Somebody has an opportunity here. I don't know if I should expect a government-funded agency to be the one to take advantage of that. And sometimes I go, well, how about you, Scott Ott, you big mouth? Why don't you do something about it? And I think that's fair criticism. And by the way, anybody who suggests that, you've got 5 days off without pay. I'm Scott Ott with Bill Whittle and Stephen Green. Thank you to the members at BillWhittle.com for making Right Angle possible.